Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about Clearly Defined, how to find out the license for that piece of open source software. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 518, recorded February 22nd, 2019. Clearly Defined. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to download right after this show and play with. Today won't be either of those, I don't think, but we'll go ahead and give it a try anyway. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Randall. Nice to be here.
And it looks like you're in your wife's man cave. Is that how we describe that?
We split the room up, you know, kind of like in the old 80s TV shows where the kids are having fighting problems. They do the white line down the middle. And you can't cross over onto my side of the room. So that's my wife's side of the room back there. Mm-hmm. She's a teacher, yes. So she's got lots of books and all kinds of teaching implements back there. And then my side of the room, which you can't see, is actually this way. So it's the side that I'm facing. So I've got all the PCBs that I've designed are up here in front of me. All my books are up top and all of my, Raspberry Pis and whatnot are down here on my desk. So, every time you see me at home in my office, you're actually seeing my wife's side of the room.
Cool. And I am once again in the, we call it the Tijuana kitchen set, because I'm right behind me is the kitchen for this apartment here that I share with my friend Ed. And he's the one that arranged all those magnets on the shelter. And they've been in the same place for like 4 years now. So it's been pretty crazy.
I'll change the magnets.
He said he's going to change them soon. All right. Well, that was my roommate there. He said he will change them soon. So next week, when you see this, you might see him in a slightly different order. Great. Well, today we have a great show lined up. We're going to have Carol Smith on in a couple minutes. She's going to be talking about the Clearly Defined project, which according to their description is on a mission to help free Libre open source projects thrive by being well and clearly defined. The lack of clarity around licenses and security vulnerabilities reduces engagement, and that means fewer users, fewer contributors, and a smaller community. So Simon Phipps actually brought this project to us. As you may have remembered from a few weeks ago, I was scrambling to try to find more things coming up, and so luckily my whole team all stepped up to it and said, you should have this on, you should have this on, you should have this on, and then we filled 8 slots like within like a week. That was really a miracle, because it means I was able to recover from not having done my job of filling the future slots up. But anyway, so it's pretty cool. Aaron, what do you know about this so far?
I did not know anything about it, I'll be honest, before it was brought up as a show. But it looks, I did read through at least the first page in terms of what the project's about, and it is kind of exciting. For a couple of reasons. One is that, we'll get into it in a minute, obviously, but, there's this move, right? When you're coding software in the modern world, there's some things that you don't necessarily, you want to get there as fast as possible, release your code in whatever state it's in. Hopefully it's a good state. And so I think sometimes the license issues, right, and security and things like that can be kind of an afterthought. Even more so than it was when we had these 6 month or 1 year windows for releasing our software on the gold mastered CD, you know? So I think a project like this is actually really important because I'm assuming it's going to help developers with their, to make sure that when they're doing their licensing, they're doing it correctly. But we'll find out, I guess.
Well, you know, it's always interesting because I do get occasional questions in email about when are you going to do a show about licensing? I have a feeling this is that show. So with no further ado, let's go ahead and bring on Carol Smith. Carol, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Happy to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I am in Redmond, Washington. I am stolen a conference room at work. So it's currently just ended snowing outside as well, which I can't recommend Washington right now this time of year.
Well, Redmond and work reminds me of possibly – might you be working for Microsoft?
I do work for Microsoft, yes.
Ah.
That is my day job.
Cool. I won't hold that against you. Although, you know, it's really funny. It's really funny, you know, from the days of the Halloween newsletter to now, Microsoft has really done like a full 180 on open source and embracing open source and being open source. I'm still trying to, oh, I know what you do. Walk down the hallway after the show and try to get the guys from VS Code on. I've been trying to get to them and they stopped not responding to me.
Sure, I do work very close by them. I would be happy to walk down the hallway and give them a shout.
Because I'm amazed. VS Code is so remarkable. I've been using it for doing my Flutter work and my Dart work. And it's the first time I've been happy with an IDE that wasn't Emacs. So it's definitely an amazing device.
Yeah, it is a much beloved project. And yes. I'm happy to hear that you are happy with it.
I am happy with it. And it's sort of like if it hadn't come along, I don't know how well I'd be doing Flutter because I'd have to be using Android Studio or something ugly and slow like that. But anyway, let's talk about Clearly Defined. What's it all about?
So I am the program manager on Clearly Defined, and I'm also on the board of directors of the Open Source Initiative. And so I'm the project sponsor for Clearly Defined since it's a project under the OSI. Clearly Defined is a project that's in the FOSS compliance space. So we are particularly focused just on licensing data about FOSS projects. So we're interested in three pieces of data in particular. We're interested in what is its license, what is its source location, and who are the attribution parties for the project. So we've been pretty laser focused in the last year while we've been building the project on those three pieces of data. As you folks said in the introduction, we do think that there are going to be other pieces of data about FOSS projects that we think folks are going to be interested in getting from Clearly Defined in the future, but we've been really focused on building that part of the project out so far. So we have been focused just on the licensing data.
And why is licensing important?
For many reasons. This is actually a thing that no matter who you are in the FOSS community, you probably either struggle with or might be interested in or might have experienced some problems with in the past. So this is a thing that, as you guys said in the opening, open source developers should be particularly interested in. Having clear licensing data about how your project is a great way for people to feel confident in using your project. If they don't know how it's licensed or what the implications or ramifications of the license your project is under, they might feel a little hesitant to adopt your project or to use it or to build on top of it. Mm-hmm. This is a thing that open source organizations that are building on top of open source need as well. They want to feel confident about the open source that they're using and how it is licensed. And this is a thing that companies who are using open source want to know as well. They want clear licensing data so that they understand and they can feel confident that they're in compliance with all of the open source that they're using.
And so does Clearly Defined take a position on, say, fairly liberal licenses like BSD and MIT versus more restrictive licenses like GPL? Is there a position there that
we do not? There is no position at all. We do not have any perspective. The only thing that we are conveying through the Clearly Defined data are the facts about that we know about that FOSS project. So what is this license? Do we have a factual understanding of what that license is? What is its source location and who are the attribution parties? Because licenses often require you to disclose source location or copyright holders to comply with the license. We will convey all of the data that we have about any given open source project, and we don't take any position at all on what you do with that data or how you interpret that.
So if I want to create a project and I want it to be done my way, and I just invent a license, what's the risk in that?
There's probably a lot of risk, but Clearly Defined wouldn't really have any particular perspective on that. If it is an open source license, if it's a license that has an SPDX identifier, then you could, if you include that in sort of a community understood normal way, like for example, putting it in a licenses file in your repo, we would pick that up if we went and harvested and scanned your open source. If you do not have a SPDX identified license in a sort of understood way, we probably would harvest and scan your project and not be able to produce any licensed data about your project inherently. But again, the risk that you as a developer would have in that is kind of up to you. If you wanted to encourage adoption because you wanted to make yourself more clearly licensed, then we would love for you to do that in a way that's understood and for you to choose a license that is an open source license and to convey that again in a community understood way. But your risk is your own.
And how do Clearly Defined get started?
The team of folks who have been working on the project, we sort of looked around about a year ago, and we found that the open source compliance space is a very rich space. There are lots of tools that do all sorts of things in this space. There are tools that do dependency analysis and analytics and talk about project health. There's lots of different things in this space. But there wasn't anybody who was really just kind of, like I said, laser focused on clear licensing data. And we felt like this was a niche that we could fill with this project. We also felt like it was a really natural place to project to bring to the OSI. It would be well honed there because the OSI is so focused on promoting and protecting open source, and we felt like this was a natural project for OSI to have. But we felt like this was a community problem. This is something that folks are, like I said, it doesn't matter kind of who you are in FOSS, you're probably thought about this or might be struggling with it, and we felt like having clear licensing data and building a community and a process and a project around it was a niche we could fill.
Cool. And this is, you know, like the, probably the biggest place where open source lives is GitHub. Is this going to mm-hmm. be a special file in the right place in GitHub so that it'll be easily detectable?
Yeah, that's kind of the approach we've already taken with the software that we've built. We've already gone and harvested almost 500,000 packages in a bunch of different places, GitHub being one of them, but NPM and Maven and other places as well. And yeah, so the way the software is written is that if you have your license information in a sort of, as I said, sort of community understood way in a licenses file, in a copying file, those sorts of community norms, we likely are able to get all of that information in an automated way about your project already. So it's entirely possible that if your listeners have open source projects, we might have already gone and harvested and scanned that project, and we might actually have licensing data about your project. Now, we understand that this is not a problem that we're going to be able to solve entirely in an automated way and with our tools. So we've also built a process and a community around making the data more, if you'll excuse the pun, clearly defined. The software and the automated harvesting and scanning that we're doing right now is just one part of the whole process. In places where the information is missing or ambiguous, if we have your license listed as MTI and it should be MIT, we have a process in place where humans, people can go and edit our data and curate it. And then the community as a whole can go and discuss whether that change is the correct one. So yes, I do think that this is actually an MIT license, not an MTI license. And then you are able to, as a community, augment the clearly defined data and make it more clear over time. And in fact, there's actually one other part of the whole process that we think is really important, which is we don't just want to make the clearly defined data more clear. We want to have the open source projects themselves be more clear. And so the last part of our process is that we also want to upstream our changes back to the open source projects. And we want to have a conversation with the projects about how in future versions of their project they can be more clearly licensed and what the sort of community norms are around how we would understand what your license is in the future in a way that we didn't before. Or it was just, you know, I typed MTI and I should have typed MIT and I won't do that in future versions. So there's a huge spectrum of making these things more clearly licensed, and that's the other part of the project that we're focused on.
Now, a couple of times you mentioned SPDX. I don't know if I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, SPDX is a data exchange format. So it's a format that you can use to convey how your project is licensed, and it makes it very easy for automation to understand what your license is. So SPDX has a list of a bunch of license expressions that are how they understand licenses. So GPL and the way that you would convey GPL in order for computers and humans to be able to read it and to understand it. And so all of the license expressions that are in clearly defined are in an SPDX format so that they're easily computer read, and also so that we understand that it is open source and exactly what license it is that you're referring to.
And so, is this like the way that CC BY NA has a particular shape to it, so you can recognize that as a Creative Commons license?
Yes, yes, exactly. So that we know exactly what license you are referring to, in a clear, consistent way. Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. So I may have missed it when you were talking about how this got started, but I mean, how long has this been going on? How long?
Just about over a year. So we became a project under the OSI in January of last year. So just over a year. We've been basically spent the last year building a bunch of the software and sort of and doing the harvesting and the scanning of those 500,000 components that I mentioned, and also trying to build out the community as well. So not only is it really important that the software works and gets the right data about these projects, but also we really want to involve the community in this process, because we are not going to solve this just with tools. We're going to need humans to get involved and to get on board with also making this licensing data more clear. And so we've also spent the last year building the community and getting folks from all over the FOSS world involved in whichever ways they're interested.
Right. And I, as a developer, is there anything that I need to do specifically besides using the standard licenses in my code? Is there anything that I need to do to make this work? Or because I noticed on your webpage, for example, you said you can add a few properties to a package manifest or drop a simple file in your code repo. So I'm kind of curious, like, what do I need to do as an end user?
I would say that if you are a developer who's just kind of following the community norms about how you would convey what your license is, you probably don't need to do anything. That if you are kind of following the standard way that most folks produce and release open source, it's entirely possible there might be no burden on you whatsoever. And in fact, you might already be clearly defined. If you are keeping your license in a random file called jar.md in a repo somewhere in a strange part of your GitHub org, that would be sort of a case where you might have something you might need to do in order to become more clearly defined. We would, again, suggest that you might need to follow sort of standard conventions around how you would get convey your license information. But it's entirely possible for most developers that your open source project might already be clearly defined. If you know what your license is, you put that in a file and made that clear. That's actually part of the project's philosophy, is that we really don't want to put the onus on the developers unless it's really sort of out of community norms. We want a lot of this to be completely automatable and done through tools. And we want humans to get involved and to be part of the process, but only in places where it kind of needs to be the case.
And so at the end of the day, is this something that I would use as a, like, outside of the, if I'm not a developer, I mean, who has access to this, and who can anybody just get in here and start doing some searching? Is there like a database that I can search?
Yeah. If you are just interested in just kind of taking a look-see and seeing what we've harvested and what we have available right now, you can go to clearlydefined.io/browse and type in the name of your favorite open source project, and we might have it. We might not. If you're looking for something in particular, if you, for example, are somebody who has built an open source project on top of, say, 50 other open source things, you could construct a list of those 50 things that you are interested in learning about from Clearly Defined, and you can call our API. All of our APIs are freely available, and you can access them right now if you'd like to. I actually have a URL I was going to send you folks for the API docs that I can give you after the show, but if folks just want to make a post to our API of 100 components that they're interested in and see what we have, you're welcome to do that. And then, yes, anybody can use it. So if you are, for example, a company who is looking at the compliance space, you can also start calling our API right now and getting back the information we have about these open source projects. If you call our API for something that we haven't harvested and scanned, we will go and harvest and scan it. So we might have it tomorrow if we don't have it right now. But if you're just like a general developer and you're just interested in seeing what Clearly Defined has, I would probably suggest the browse page for you.
Yeah, you just mentioned something that was going to be my next question, actually, which is a lot of companies, you know, even if you're developing proprietary code, it's very likely that you are using some sort of open source component in the background or, you know, as part of the overall package. So that was going to be my next question is this also a goal of the project, is to be able to help companies figure out, go in and figure out what licensing restrictions or requirements do I actually need to think about in my overall, you know, scope of the business?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, the compliance space is rich with a bunch of tools that do lots of things that clearly defined doesn't do. So, for example, dependency analysis and many other kinds of things. And clearly defined is really meant to hook into those other tools and into other workflows. Like you said, companies probably have other ways that they're already finding out a lot of this data about the open source that they're using. And so clearly defined is specifically meant to fill that space where you know what you're using. Now you want to know what is the licensing information. Clearly defined is exactly positioned to be able to provide you that.
Yeah. And then the other thing, there's two security questions I had. One is from so you're going out and you're harvesting all this data, but, and I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask just in case anyone is thinking this as well. Is there any risk to my code, as you're going out and harvesting? Is there anything that you could change or impact, the way that my code is running, through this process?
No, absolutely not. So we're not doing anything with the codes and the code or the packages that are available that someone in the public without any sort of like read, without any sort of write or change access to your code couldn't do. So if I as a member of the public could go and look at your FOSS project, that's basically what Clearly Defined can do. What we're doing is we're actually pulling the packages from the providers. So we're going to npm.js and we're taking down, say, jQuery 1.1, and we're actually opening it up and we're running a bunch of tools on it. But that's all stuff that any member of the public could do. It just right. So happens that once we've done all that work, we're now providing that back to the public as a service.
Right. Fantastic. That's what I thought, but I just wanted to clarify for people just to make sure that they weren't old here. But then the other part of that is, you know, checking the security of the applications or raising security concerns. I know one of the things on your website talks about, you know, making sure that your code is secure. How do you actually help with that?
So security, like I said, so we've been laser focused on licensing data for the last year. So that's pretty much the only thing we've been talking about, and that's basically all that we've been building. Security is the sort of the next horizon for us, and so we're starting to talk about what clearly defined data about for security would look like. But we haven't built any of that out yet. And in fact, I would love for your listeners to talk to us and to get engaged in our community if they have ideas or opinions about what kind of data clearly defined could provide in the security space. We don't think that it would probably be useful for us to just be another security vulnerability database. There's probably better information that our end users would want in the security space that clearly defined could be really well positioned to provide. And we'd like to hear from the community what that would be. So we've recognized that if we're going to be in the data space, that data about FOSS includes things like security information, but we haven't designed that. We don't know what that looks like yet. So I would love to hear from your listeners about what they think it should look like.
Yeah, cool. So is part of the impetus for this project also from an OSI perspective to try to get some data and some stats on who's using what license basically, so they can figure out maybe with better granularity, like which license is more popular or which ones are growing in popularity or declining in popularity? Does this help with that at all?
Yeah, I think I think this is just information that's generally useful that clearly defined will be able to provide. We will absolutely be start to have stats about what licenses we're seeing out there, how popular things are, and folks can use that information for whatever they want. But this is something that clearly defined absolutely can start to provide. We also have another part of clearly defined that I haven't talked about yet, which is we have a score. So we have built an algorithm around each individual project's license data and how clearly defined it was. And we give each project a score. And the scoring of a project over time and as they improve their licensing information, and if, for example, they weren't very clearly licensed in version 1.1, but they're now very clearly licensed in version 2.1, their score will increase. That's also information we think that the community would be really interested in, and we want to provide to the public as a general information about NPMs in this particular part of the FOSS world have gotten more clearly licensed over time, and these particular projects have stayed the same over time. So yeah, I think that's all very good data that we as a community could really benefit from just having more transparency around.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Can you give me some examples about what would impact that score? I mean, you don't have to go into all the details, but I'm just kind of curious, what would I be doing wrong, right? And then when I change it, would maybe have an impact on that score?
Yeah, I mean, the simplest example is just, could we find your license? Do we know what your license is? And if we couldn't detect a license, if you just don't have a file in there that has a license and you're missing it entirely, then you'll naturally have a lower score. There's also some other things, for example, we use tools to look at the package itself to try to, like I said, to kind of figure out what your license information is in an automated fashion. If those tools, for example, discover that you have 5 license files, each of which says, one says you're MIT, one of which says you're Apache, one of which says you're something else, and we're not able to determine which of those it is, or we're not able to determine that you are in fact multi-licensed or dual licensed in a coherent way, that might, for example, might lower your score. What I would say, everything that goes into the algorithm is things I think would it's again kind of follow kind of common sense around licensing. So if you are kind of following the community norms, you probably don't have anything you need to worry about. There are lots of cases where, for example, we don't know what your license is, and so you'll have a lower score. And if we are able to figure out what your license is in a future version, your score will go up.
Mm, that's really interesting. Is there? I'm sure you can do a lot of this work by algorithm, right? And crawling and parsing and so forth. But is there a human element to this as well? Is there a point where humans have to get involved and do some searching and
absolutely.
Some digging?
Yes. It's really great that we have community norms around licensing, and unfortunately not everybody is following them, which I'm sure is probably just because humans are involved. So we have a automated process where we go and we try and we run a bunch of tools. We run a tool called ScanCode, which does scanning on open source packages. We run tools called Fossology, which also does scanning. We run Licensee, which is a GitHub tool that tries to figure out what an open source project's license is. We run a bunch of tools, and then basically we run over all of the information that we've gotten from all of those tools and try and get the best, what we call definition, which is essentially the best information about your license, your source location, and your attribution parties that we could figure out. And then we expose that definition. Again, that's just our service. But then, yes, the next piece of it is often those tools have missing or ambiguous information. Like I said, you said your license was MTI, and for some reason, other people think that it's MIT. So then we have a way that you can, on clearly defined, as a person, as a user, go and change the license data right there. And then that change is submitted as a pull request on GitHub. And so the community can come and talk about, yes, I do think actually that this project is licensed under MIT, even though they've listed their license as MTI. We think this is a good change. And the community can have a conversation about whether the change is the proper one and whether that is a more clear conveyance of what the project's license is. And just like code, this is data, but you can think of it just like code. People can have other opinions and say, no, we don't think that that's a good change. We think actually, yes, in fact, their license is MTI, and we have reason to believe it because we saw this mailing list thread where somebody said, I want to license myself as MTI, and so we don't think that this change should be submitted. But anyway, we want the community to come to a consensus around this data, and over time, the community can help improve it. Every time that one of those pull requests, one of those changes is merged on clearly defined, the clearly defined data is augmented and will then produce that new information to our users that has the better data from that pull request.
Does a clearly defined database have the notion of dependency? So if I depend on another project and it depends on another project, can I trace that with clearly defined?
No. We do not have the notion of dependencies anywhere in clearly defined, and purposefully so. We understand that there's a bunch of other tools that do dependency analysis in this space and probably do it better than we could. And so we are, again, sort of laser focused on just the data and not on dependencies at all. So if you ask me about jQuery 1.1, I will give you all the information I know about jQuery 1.1. And if you then ask me about jQuery 1.2, I will give you all the information I know about jQuery 1.2. And I won't have any reason to connect the two things and why you asked me. I will just give you all the information I have about each of those individual independent components.
So you've been doing this for a year now. What's been the biggest outcome of what's actually resulted from what you've been doing?
Well, I mean, the software itself, I mean, basically we've taken it from just a vision, just an idea to a real thing that's serving users and open for business. And we have almost 500,000 definitions computed. So that in itself, I think is great because we've proven that this is a thing that people need, and we've proven success in this space. The other thing that's been, I think, really nice in the last year is that the number of conversations and the number of people in the community who have said, "Oh yeah, like this is a needed project. Like we understand why this is in the OSI. We understand why you're building this. We understand like this all really makes sense. Your mission and your goals are important to the community, and we see what you're doing, and that's been really nice, and it's been nice to grow the number of people who are involved and interested.
Do you have any statistics on what's the most frequently used license?
No, we don't have that. I mean, we could probably search for it, but we haven't we haven't done that search, and we haven't published that information yet. We are building out a stats page. We're starting the stats page with basically the number of definitions we have and the number of packages from each of the ecosystems. So NPM, Maven, PyPI, RubyGems, et cetera, that we've harvested. And I think that stats page is going to get huge, and there's lots of things we can add to it. So that absolutely would be one of them, is most commonly used licenses, which ecosystems are using, which, how popular is a license within an ecosystem, all that sort of stuff. Those are just queries that we at some point need to run and publish as our users ask for that information.
Cool. And how did you get to be a license geek?
I have spent a long time in open source in general. I worked in the Google Open Source Programs Office. I worked in GitHub in the Student Developer Pack, and I'm now in the Open Source Programs Office at Microsoft, and I am on the board of the Open Source Initiative. I've just been involved and passionate about FOSS for a very long time, and I think one of the fundamental parts of participating in FOSS is being interested and feeling passionately about licenses, is as geeky as that sounds.
Definitely,
even coming out of my mouth, it sounds a little silly, but yes.
Well, my first experience with open source licenses, of course, was Perl, and recognizing that Larry Wall wrote it from scratch and it had dual meaning. It was both GPL licensed in case somebody wanted to have a formal license, but he had this wonderful thing called the artistic license that he created. Artistic too is actually was actually gone over by lawyers, so we know it's a lot more formal than Artistic 1 was. Artistic 1 was basically do what you want with it, really. It's just yours. So, speaking to that, Richard Hipp's products, SQLite and Fossil, are both under essentially a public domain license. Do you recognize those? Are you able to categorize those?
We do not recognize public domain because public domain is not open source and it doesn't have an SPDX identifier. So right now, clearly defined, we'll see that in the way that SPDX recognizes that, which is SPDX puts those under an expression called no assertion, which is basically we can't tell what it is. We don't think it's open source from what we can glean. Public domain is not open source as the OSI has a long, lengthy blog post about as well. And I would be happy to participate in those conversations, but clearly defined's position on it is that no, we don't recognize that.
Cool. Okay. And obviously you recognize artistic too, because that's pretty formal now. I think that's part of the OSI.
Yeah, pretty much. If it has an SPDX identifier, we can understand it. Whether or not your project, we will pick up that your project is licensed in that particular way is again going to depend on the tools and where you've put your license file and a bunch of other kind of things like that. But in general, if you say I am under this SPDX license, clearly defined, can understand that.
And what if you find multiple licenses in a project? What do you do with that?
We have two different concepts in Clearly Defined. So we have the declared license, which is what we sort of refer to as like the thing that you say you are licensed under. And if you are dual licensed, we can handle that. If you are multi-licensed, we can handle that. It may or may not, you know, again, just based on our tooling, that may or may not come out in the harvesting and the scanning. It kind of depends on where you've kept your license files, like I said. And then we also have a concept called discovered licenses. So again, we're running a bunch of tools on your package or on your project, and we're finding as much information about your project as we can from the information that we've been given. And sometimes we will discover other licenses in your package that might not be per se your declared license. For example, if you have a bunch of tests that are GPL, but you are licensed under MIT, your declared license would probably be MIT, again, depending on how you've licensed yourself. But we would just say that we also discovered GPL in your code as well. So we want to give our end users as much information, as much factual information about what we found as we can, and to be completely transparent and to say, we found MIT and GPL. We think that this project is licensed as MIT. If you disagree as an end user, you can come and curate that data. But this is what the Clearly Defined tools were able to find.
And what's some of the more unusual licenses that maybe only exist for, say, one package or another?
I mean, there's a ton of them. The OSI list, I think, would probably be the best place to find those out. I mean, there's tens, maybe hundreds, actually, of licenses that I think are kind of on the long tail of licenses that projects use. Actually, the SPDX list as well, I'm sure, is super lengthy in those cases. There's lots of licenses that have like exceptions. So GPL, can have different exceptions. There's a class path exception. I mean, there's a ton of them, and Clearly Defined can understand all of them. But again, like. How you license is kind of your business, and we just want it to be clear. Whatever you've chosen, we just want it to be very obvious and readily available so we can tell our end users who you are and what you're about.
And are you still seeing licenses like this is okay to use for any purpose except military?
Oh, I don't know that I have come across that in my work and travels. That does not mean that it's not there. I just can't say that I've personally run into it. Really?
I think more popular in the 70s, I think, is a kind of a response to.
I absolutely believe you. I have not run across those.
Wow. And so is this your day job too, or do you actually have other work you're doing to get paid?
Yes, I do have this is part of my day job. So I work at Microsoft in the open source programs office, and being the program manager on Clearly Defined is a large portion of my day job. I also do other work in the open source programs office for Microsoft. So we have, as you said at the top of the show, we have a lot of other work we're doing in the open source space. So we work internally with other teams in open source, and then we also work externally with other open source communities and with other folks outside of Microsoft and with other companies and organizations who are also in this space. I'd say in general, I'm kind of part of the open source transformation that Microsoft is going through right now, and being trying to be a good FOSS community citizen and participate in all the ways that make sense and are appropriate nowadays.
Yes, and congratulations to Microsoft for making that 180-degree turn. That's really it's really been surprising to me, you know. And it's like I can no longer like look towards Redmond and wince as I used to. it's now a much better place to.
That is high praise.
And considering I've been doing open source all my life, I mean, basically from the time I was just initially into getting into software, it was all open source to start with. So I've been using Perl since its inception 28 years ago. So I've been definitely making a fine living off of using open source software. Oh, we have a question in the chat room here. How does ClearlyFine handle claims of identity theft where the author is just a handle with no contact details? I don't know if that's a solid question. Or take that.
I would probably need more information there. So, so if it's just a package that's available on NPM, but the sort of the author is not clear, I don't know that I can say. I mean, I would say we can still go harvest and scan that package, and we'll get whatever information we can about it. I think maybe the questioner is asking about, like, someone says that they own that package when they don't.
I guess I probably
need more information.
Yeah, another chat room person says, Eric Deckman, one of our regulars, says, clearly secured. No. Are you scraping this from the website, or are you hitting APIs from things like GitHub and GitLab and things like that?
All of the above. So we are going to the package providers, so npm.js, and we're getting the packages from there. We also support all of the all of GitHub, so we can go and look at the Git repositories and scan those. So we're kind of harvesting from everywhere. We are only supporting certain ecosystems right now. Actually, that's a good thing for me to mention as well. So we support npm, Rust, Maven, PyPI, NuGet, and RubyGems, CocoaPods, and a couple others. But we have not moved into the Linux world yet. That's actually something I'd love to mention to your listeners. If someone who's listening has experience with Linux, the Lance package world, whatever, wherever it might be, and they would like to come and help us be able to harvest and scan the Linux world as well, we would love the help. We want to continue to expand the amount of packages that we've harvested, as well as the sort of the number of ecosystems that we support. So we would love help. We've done the ones that are popular and we had an understanding of, but there's a lot more work to be done there.
I was listening very carefully and I didn't hear it. CPAN?
Yeah, not yet. So
No.
So again, I would encourage your listeners to go to our browse page, see what we have. And if you don't see the thing that you're looking for, then please join our community and help us get the thing that you're looking for. Whether that's an individual project or whether that's a whole ecosystem of packages that we just don't support yet.
So clearly the clearly defined packages, the ones that actually make up your website and things like that, those are open source, right?
Yes. So the software itself is MIT, and then all of the data that we are providing to users is all CC0. So we've really gone to the trouble, and we've really made it a part of the project philosophy that everything that we have, we want to be completely available to users. And in fact, we actually, when we run these tools on these packages, we make all of the harvested data, the raw harvested data, also available to users if they want to look at it. We summarize it into that definition that I was talking about, which is just those three pieces of information, because we think that's what most users are going to be looking for. But if you want to go and see every bit of information that we got about a particular package, you can go and find that as well. We want it to be very clear, the entire providence of all of the data that we are providing to our users, so that they don't have any concerns about the quality or the transparency of the data. Now, if it's wrong, we want you to come and fix that, help us fix that. But we don't want you to ever be worried about the providence.
Cool. So while Randall's been asking questions, I've actually been poking around in the definitions, which is really easy to use, by the way. You just go to clearlydefined.io and click on the little definitions tab or button, whatever, at the top of the webpage, and it takes you to a little search engine where you can look for stuff. And so I've been poking around at like some of my company's code, which is AppDynamics, which is, I'm not going to tell you the scores. But they're really bad.
But you found your company's code on there, so that's good. We harvested your stuff.
It's discovered, right? It's discoverable.
Yeah, if you go and you hover on your score, you will see the components of the algorithm that made up that score. There's only one word for each part of the score, so it might not necessarily be obvious to you exactly what is making up that score right there, but we're trying to expose as much as we can about how we're building that score to you.
Yeah, exactly. So I just did, I just hovered over it and it's, you know, 000. It's like, oh man, we got to go fix this. But I think this is really a great tool for companies who just want to just to do a quick inspection of like, am I doing things correctly? And the other thing I noticed is that I don't have a whole lot on GitHub, and most of my stuff I write are just like pet projects. I need to get more on GitHub just for, you know, so other people can use it. But I noticed that like when I do a search for my name, I don't see my name in there coming up as any sort of hit. Why would that be?
Okay, so you're saying that you're looking at a particular, you're looking at something that you folks built and you are expecting to appear in the copyright holder's information?
Yeah, so when I search on clearly defined, like if I just put in my first name, Aaron, I see a lot of GitHub users. So basically what I'm doing is I want to do a search on my username in GitHub.
That might just be a function of the search on the website. The tool is really constructed around looking for an open source project, an individual component. So jQuery 1.1. While you probably are seeing people because of GitHub repos that we've gone and harvested and we'll have information about authors in there, I wouldn't per se necessarily expect to be able to find like you an individual GitHub user on there. That might just be a function of the way that your packages are on GitHub or your code is there. That might not necessarily be anything you did like sort of wrong.
Right. Right. Okay. Good. I just wanted to make sure I'm like, am I excluded? Did I offend somebody? Like,
you are not excluded. I'm really happy to hear that we've already harvested your projects, because that means that you can come and participate in the community and help you become more clearly defined. So you are already an honorary member of our community.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. That's great. I mean, you know, and you mentioned Nugget, for example. So that's there was three or four of our projects that came up on Nugget. And then one of them came up on GitHub. So we have more out there. So it just makes me wonder, like, okay, why aren't they in there? Like, you know, maybe there's a way to gamify this somehow. I don't know.
I think there absolutely is there are great ways that we can gamify this. We just we've just had a pile of work and we haven't. But like, I think this is a great natural extension. Our browse page, you can do a bunch of filtering on our browse page that is actually intended to try to be the first step towards kind of gamifying it. So you can actually search for things specifically that have a low score. So you can search for your projects and, you know, sort by things that, for example, are missing their license entirely. And that's meant to encourage our community to come and to help us curate this data. So for example, for your projects that you're looking at that have a score of zero, if there isn't a declared license in there, you could go and just add what your license is right now. And you can make that pull request like as we're speaking. And that it's meant to be super easy for a user to engage with our project so that we can start to over time clear the licensing data and also build the community.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to brag, but Perl is 55 and Python is 45 and PHP is 51. So, yay, Perl!
you're not bragging. You're just stating facts.
I am reading it right off the screen. I'm not making these numbers up. It's right here in your database. So, yes, that's pretty cool. Hey, we're almost out of time.
I actually have one other thing I wanted to mention which is just kind of a fun thing that we've added to the tool that might be interesting to folks. It might not be interesting to everyone, but it's something I wanted to mention. If you have a package lock file for your project, you can actually drag and drop it on that definitions page that Aaron, you were talking about, and you can actually export it right now as a notice file. So you can actually take every individual component that's in that package lock file and just export it right now with all of the license data, all the copyright information and all of the license text for every individual component. You could just generate a notice file right now if you wanted to, which might be interesting for some of your users if they are people who generate notice files either for their own projects or for their companies. And that's something that Clearly Defined is really well positioned to be able to do, and it's super easy for us. So we like doing it.
How complete are you in walking all of GitHub?
I don't know that I could answer that question because how big is GitHub?
it's about 8 inches by 6 inches on my screen.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say we have harvested all of the popular projects on the package providers, so on NPM and Maven and NuGet and et cetera, et cetera. And In a lot of cases, packages point to their source location on GitHub. And so we have gone to the source on GitHub and we have harvested and scanned that as well, which is why we have such a huge corpus of GitHub data as well, is because we've scanned a bunch of source on GitHub. But we've done that because somebody was interested in a popular package on npm.js. We haven't specifically gone to GitHub and just scanned everything. What we're trying to do as a community and clearly defined is we're trying to have information about the packages that people are likely to ask us about, the things that are popular, the things that people are going to be interested in the licensing data around. Eventually, we'll have everything. We'll have the world. But for the last year since we've been building the software, we've been focusing on trying to prove success. And that has meant focusing mostly on popular projects. Like I said, again, if you ask us our API for something that we don't have, we will go and harvest and scan it. So that is another way that we're determining what people are interested in. And so over time, we'll start to get more and more of that stuff, much of which will be on GitHub.
So me searching for the three packages I have on GitHub, that are all Perl, by the way, is actually implementing some sort of request to go out and scan those eventually?
Yes. Yeah. So particularly it sounded like you found the stuff you were looking for, but in particular, if you looked for something, if you put in a coordinate, the coordinate is how we identify each of the individual package. If you put in a coordinate and we don't have it and we're not able to return a definition, we just proactively go off and harvest and scan it. And then in the fullness of time, eventually we want Clearly Defined to actually be monitoring all of the package providers. And whenever a new version of anything that we've already harvested and scanned comes out, we will just go proactively harvest and scan that. We're not there yet. We've right now, like I said, we've been focusing on what our users have been asking us for and doing it based on popularity. But eventually we want to have the whole world everywhere. Eventually.
Cool. It looks like SQLite is actually 54. So just one down from Perl, but Perl still wins. Perl is still winning.
But nobody's bragging.
Nobody bragging. I'm just reading the numbers off the screen. That's all I do here. Anyway, we're almost out of time. What's in the future for Clearly Defined? And what's the biggest thing you're still missing? And what kinds of people do you need to make that happen?
Yeah, so I'd say absolutely most crucial to us is getting more folks involved in our community and doing curations and helping to make this data more clear and better for our users. And we want folks using the data, so everyone, please use our data. We have provided it as a service for free because we want people to use it. On the horizon is definitely clearly secure. We've been hearing from a lot of folks that is an interesting thing that they would like to see in the Clearly Defined data, and we think that, again, we're well positioned to be able to provide that. So that's definitely next on the horizon. And then also, as a general part of the whole project and the process, is we also want to be working with the upstream projects to have themselves become more clearly defined over time. And so we want to work with communities on what is their community norm around how they produce their licensing data for their packages, and are the clearly defined tools harvesting that in the right way, and can we improve our tooling? Actually, you're right. My license is MIT, not MTI. I'm going to change that so the next version is picked up by Clearly Defined. All of those sorts of conversations with the projects themselves is definitely really important to the whole project success. So that's going to be a lot of conversations, and it's going to involve a lot of word of mouth about this project. So hopefully folks who are using the data will tell other folks, and over time, this will start to become an even bigger community project.
Well, given that, over the last 30 years, I've definitely seen the world shift to more and more open source software. The idea of having a cleanly defined license, I mean, OSI took that on, 15 years ago, and that's a good framework, but also have a way to do some sort of automated query for that, so I can kind of see what the lay of the land is. This is definitely a very important project.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I cool. hope you will yourself become more clearly defined and use our data and get involved in our community.
Yes. Well, in my spare time between, I think it's like 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., I probably could do something like this. I haven't got that allocated on my calendar just yet.
So. In all of our infinite free time.
Yes. And two final questions, because my audience will yell at me if I don't ask these. What's your favorite programming language?
My favorite programming language? Probably Python.
Okay, whatever. And okay, Perl scored higher. Perl scored higher. And what's your favorite text editor?
Oh, jeez. Emacs.
Emacs, yes. Okay. I got to win.
Okay, so I got like a 50% on these two questions.
Yeah, you did it. Emacs, my favorite text editor. There's a little bit of me in every copy of Emacs that ships. So the Emacs Lisp pretty printer I actually wrote, and Richard Stallman called it brilliant and wanted me to make sure I get that into the distribution. So there's a little bit of me in every copy of Emacs. Very cool. So it's been wonderful chatting with you, and now I have to scroll down and get your name again. I don't want to do that. Carol, thanks for coming to talk to us about the whole clearly defined project. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. It was great to be here. Thanks, guys.
Cool. And Aaron, what did you think?
Well, may I echo what you were saying at the end there? I think this is great. I like the fact that Microsoft is supporting this. I agree with your comments about Microsoft. I was just thinking the other day, like, wow, what world is this? Where am I? Like, this is really strange. Microsoft company that's supporting open source in many different ways now. Very weird, but very welcome as well. And this is just one more example of it. I think this is great. So like I was saying, when you go into Clearly Defined and you actually click on the definitions and start poking around, it's a great way just to find holes, even just for your own project. Just go around, am I listed, are things correct, and then go in and fix it if it's not. So I think that even just for software developer teams, if you have a person that's at all worried about licensing, then this would be a great tool for them to get on board with. So I highly recommend people go in and check it out.
Cool. Yeah. And I'm a little disappointed in my projects weren't on there, but they're Perl projects. Who cares about Perl anymore, really? Just me, this guy with two thumbs. Yes. All right.
Well, I also figured out probably why mine weren't in there, by the way, which is a lot of my projects are, I'm not using Git for, I put them in GitHub so people can find them, but I'm actually not using Git. To because they're C++, Arduino scripts and stuff. And so I've just put them there. So there's been no pull requests. There's been lots of stars, but there's no pull requests. I just realized this one doesn't actually have an initial release, right? Because I just uploaded the code manually because I just wanted it out there for people to find. So anyway, that's probably why they haven't got that pulled in yet. So I don't feel too bad about it now, I guess.
Well, I feel a little bad about mine because it's like I said, it's Perl, so it's not being referenced from NPM or anything like that, because it just doesn't need to be that way. It doesn't work that way. But yeah, no, this is definitely a great project. I'm glad we had him on. Glad Simon brought this to us so we could have somebody for this week. And by the way, I should mention at the top of the show that we were taping on Friday instead of Wednesday because apparently there was some big event on Wednesday, so the network bumped us down to Friday. So here we are. But let's wrap up the show by talking about who's coming up next, and we're back to Wednesday starting next week again. So this is only Friday this week. It's Wednesdays from now on again until they get bumped one more time. They really like Wednesday, I guess, for doing announcements. It's really weird, so I keep getting bumped. Next week, for those of you who are hungering, you're just like, with so much anticipation, you just want to have another blockchain show. Well, that's next week. Aeon's going to come on. At the root of the Aeon network is a purpose-built public blockchain called Aeon 1, because, of course, going to call it Aeon 1 and not Aeon 2, because who would be Aeon 2? So it's designed to connect other blockchains together. Ooh, it's a meta blockchain. Blockchainception. All right. Aeon provides the economic system that incentivizes interoperability in the ecosystem. This is not be a good week to play blockchain drinking games. So do not do that during the show, because it's probably going to mention quite a few times. Following that, Megalix, they were on the show on the list for a while back, but somehow my email to confirm them at the end of the week was all went in their spam folder. That's a Kubernetes smart manager. You get insights about utilization and resources distribution in a few minutes. Get recommendations, control when and how to apply the recommendations. Following that, Flexera open source report, which is the annual vulnerability review by Security Research at Flexera Software, analyzes the evolution of software security. So for those of you in the chat room curious about security and stuff, that would probably be a good show to tune in on. Following that is Railroader, which is a security static analysis tool for finding vulnerabilities. for funding? Must be finding. I must have typoed that. Finding vulnerabilities in applications that use Ruby on Rails. And then following that, Fluid Keys, which builds on OpenPGP and makes it easy to implement great security areas across your organization. So you know how we had all those cloud shows for a while, and then we had all those blockchain shows for a while? The next few shows are going to be about security, so that'll be fun. Following that up, EdiSync, which is a secure, end-to-end, encrypted, and privacy-respecting sync for your calendars, contacts, and tasks. So yes, many security shows all in a row. You can find out about all those and more, figure out who we're working on and trying to get on the show by going to twit.tv/floss. That's the homepage for this show. And there's a link from there called Upcoming Guests. You can go look at that. If you have any other suggestions, please tell the project leader or community coordinator to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. My email address is on that page, especially if it's not cryptocurrency or blockchain. I'm trying to still stay away from those. Let's just get a little crazy. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. Normally Wednesdays, it was Friday today at live.twit.tv. We take questions from our chat room, and we took a couple today. And thank you, everybody, for being in the chat room for that. You can follow us at Floss Weekly and Google Plus for another couple weeks, but then Google Plus goes away. And at Floss Weekly on Twitter, I'll still continue to use to announce upcoming shows, things like that. You can follow me, for another couple weeks, at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and at Merlin on Twitter. And I'm still on there. So I'm supposed to plug for the home office that it's time for our yearly Twit survey. And we want to hear from you so we can serve you better. Head over to twit.to/survey19. The numbers 1 and 9. Survey 19 and be heard. So please do that so that the home office gets to find out more about who you are, so we can tell our advertisers better about who you are, and also so we can maybe they'll use that to cancel Floss Weekly. I don't know. No, don't say that. Please don't say that. All right. Anyway, because I want to keep doing this show. It's been a lot of fun so far. I'm going to be at Scale 2019 in Pasadena in about 2 weeks. So if you're going there, please come by, say hi. We're doing a Flutter/Dart meetup, BOF, on I think Thursday night. So please come by if you're interested in Flutter and Dart. And that's about all I have to plug. Aaron, what do you want to plug?
Hang on. I was just replying to Eric Duckman here. He says every time he takes the survey, he clicks on Floss. So we like that. We appreciate that. Definitely vote for Floss, as if that's one of the questions. I don't know. I haven't taken the survey myself. I should probably do that. No. So things I want to plug. So I should give a shout out to my employer, AppDynamics, who gives me time to do this. That no one's ever complained about, hey, what, you know, why is your calendar blocked off for Wednesday morning or anything like that. They've been very supportive, and they do, even though their primary product is an open source, all the extensions and things like that, they try to do open source whenever they can. So it's kind of surprising. So I should give a big shout out to them, thank them for letting me actually be on the show. And you can find out more at AppDynamics.com. If you're having a performance problem with your application, you want to get down to root cause in as little as 3 clicks, you can do it with AppDynamics. So there's my little plug for them. Also, we're starting up our annual mini maker event that we're having, although we're changing the name this year to Steam Discovery Festival. And so we've got the website just about up at steamdiscoveryfestival.com. I'm still working on it. But if you're in the Bay Area anywhere and you're a maker, you want to show off your project, or if you're a company and you want to sponsor a great community event, you can go to steamdiscoveryfestival.com or just reach out to me for more information. That's about it.
Cool. Aaron, I really want to thank you for, again, being my co-host on this week's show and providing your insight and everything as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Always glad to be here.
Cool. All right. And we'll see you all again next week on Wednesday, though. Next week on Floss Weekly.